All right, so it looks like it's time to start our next session, our first after lunch or second after lunch session. Our next presenters are Alfred Cucciera and Yuanyu, whose English name is Vera also, and they are presenting on the effects of globalization and poverty upon Philippine endangered languages.
Thank you. Already. Okay, here we go. Okay, this is the presentation outline. First of all, you can all hear me okay? Okay, great. We will go through a brief history of the Philippines. I will discuss some poverty issues, which consist of both man-made and natural causes, globalization issues, which is one of the main topics of this talk, the economic pressures, the language requirements that are imposed upon the Philippines, and I'll explain that, and then the government remedial programs, and then a conclusion and recommendations. Just a short Philippine history. Back in 1989, a piece of copper plate inscription was found that changed Philippine history. How many of you here are aware of Philippine history that was changed in 1989? Anybody aware of that? That was a tremendous event. A fisherman walking along the shore of a lake sees a piece of metal. He picks it up and he says, I might be able to get the equivalent of $5 American for this. It turns out that piece of metal was dated back to 900 AD and it changed Philippine history when it was finally translated. It became, it's a mixture of Sanskrit, Old Malay, and Javanese, and Old Tagalog, which is actually a Philippine dialect, a main Philippine language. Very interesting. And this is what it looks like. Why did it change Philippine history? Before this was found, it was thought that the Philippine people didn't even have a written language. When this was found, what this was a cancellation of a debt to a Filipino made by Malays for land that was purchased. Imagine, the cancellation of a debt. And look what it did, it changed, completely changed Philippine history. If you look at 1500 BC to 200 BC, there were three classes back then. And we're going to take a look at why that changed history. It's because of the three theories that talk about how the Philippines was founded. And you can see the different routes that were thought to be taken way back several thousand years ago. One is coming from Formosa to the Philippines. There's another one from Indochina, the possibility then back in 1500 BC. Sumatra coming up this way. So there's different kinds of theories on how the Philippines were settled. We know that there are Africans that came up forming a group of people called the Negritos, which have their own languages, some of which are endangered, by the way. Philippine poverty. How many have lived in a developing country? How many have lived in a country that had a lot of poverty? You know what it's like, right? Okay. I don't know if all developing countries have the same problems. I have a PhD in development and progress and at the Philippines, and had an opportunity to really look at it closely. There are many things that create poverty, and these are related to endangered languages, believe it or not, and I'm going to show you how. The multidimensional poverty index. The Philippines was ranked 51st out of 110 impoverished nations. 51st. If you look at the corruption, Philippines is one of the most corrupt countries in the world. This is the score. In 2011, 26% out of 100 possible points. 26. That's all they have. What's failing in corruption? Any idea? What's failing in corruption out of 100%? Who knows? Who knows? If you got one person that's corrupt, it could be bad enough to destroy the whole country, you know, if it's the president, right? In 2012, they got a score of 34. In 2013, a score of 36, so at least they're improving. The employment rate is only 92%. Well, the United States is 94, but this 92% is not really accurate. It's estimated as many as 10% of Filipinos go abroad. And we'll talk about that a little more later. China's about 95%. Hawaii is about 96%. Now, I'm assuming that that's probably increasing, that employment rate, because things seem to be booming here. Is that right?
Some more.
At least that's what I was told by a salesman the other day. One of the problems in the Philippines are the low salaries. You know, it's really interesting for me to be with Filipino colleagues who are just as intelligent or more intelligent than I am, and to find out that our instructors, our PhD instructors, are getting paid $200 American a month, rents about $50 to $100 a month. Can you imagine having a PhD and working really hard all day long? And by the way, they work really hard compared to American professors. I can tell you that right now. They're there. I mean, you're not talking about a 40-hour week. They get paid based on how many classes they teach. Can you imagine being a PhD and getting paid $200 a month and paying rent between $50 and $100? They have to share their apartment with other people. They have to live in places that don't have windows. But these are distinguished people. But, so I'm trying to make a point purposely so you can see why languages are vanishing in the Philippines. There are 10 indicators that we look at for poverty. This is developed by the University of Oxford. These 10 indicators are actually part of three dimensions of poverty. You have nutrition and child mortality as part of health. In education, you have years of schooling and school attendance. One of the biggest problems in the Philippines is that they don't go to school. When I first came to the Philippines and I'm an educator, I said, why is it that so many Filipinos don't go to school? What's the problem with these people? Right? Isn't that the first feeling you get? What's wrong with these people? There's nothing wrong with these people. How do you go to school when you got to walk across 30 yards of water? It's waist deep. Because they have so much rain out there. They have a rainy season, they have a dry season, they have a lot of flooding. How do you go to school, and I should have put a picture up there, when you have 120 students in a room that's about half as big as this, then you're going to go to school? You know, that's the kind of issues they have to face. So they have a low attendance rate because of that. Geographic issues. Now, I know that some of the impoverished countries that some of you have probably lived in have similar problems. Let's take a look at this a little closer. Over 7,000 islands. 2,000 are inhabited. Volcanic in nature. You might have heard of Mount Pinatubo, the largest volcanic eruption that took place in recent times happened in the Philippines, of Mount Pinatubo. Very mountainous area. The people have been isolated in some cases for centuries, therefore being a factor to contributing to 175 languages in the Philippines. But then there are social political pressures. Now, some of these you might have heard about. The southern islands have Muslim terrorists. Did you know that ISIS is already in the Philippines? How many people knew that? I bet it was one or two. You know Filipino?
I don't, but.
Okay. ISIS is in the Philippines. They're actually using it as a training ground. Okay? Third most assassination of politicians and journalists in the entire world is the Philippines. 77 since 1992. The year that both of us had migrated from China to the Philippines, the year that we got to the Philippines, there were how many journalists that were massacred? It was 30? Something like 33, machine gunned down. Really, really a terrible situation. How many people have seen locked up abroad with the American couple that was kidnapped by Muslim extremists? He was eventually killed. unfortunately by friendly fire. Now, part of the social issues in the Philippines is that the Filipinos are often encouraged to speak the national language. Now, as a person that's involved in development and progress, when I was at the University of Baguio, which is a different university than the one that we're a part of now in the Philippines, and I was learning progress and development and things that cause poverty, I understood this. As a matter of fact, I'm an advocate of it. What's more important to me? Reducing poverty or saving a vanishing language? This is the conflict. Now, those of you who are linguists that want to save vanishing languages, you've got to understand that right now. You've got a very essential conflict between these two things, and that's what this talk's about. If they speak the national language, they have an opportunity to work, don't they? This is the kind of thing that happens. This person, Arnel Valencia, was told he sounded like a bird by his first grade teacher. Don't talk your mother tongue, he was told. You should be talking the national language. This is the most important part of the talk right here. We've identified, Ms. Liu and myself, this death cycle of languages in the Philippines. The vanishing language is an unemployed young adult goes to learn a major language, or they can keep their own language. These are the two choices that somebody coming out of a vanishing language community has, right? If they go in this direction and they learn a major language, they secure a good job. They can work overseas if they learn English and get paid pretty well, actually. But if they only know their vanishing language, they will remain unemployed, or they can work in the rice fields. If they remain unemployed, they can enter into petty crime, or they can beg. But they have another option. They can join the militants. And by the way, there's a lot of opportunity to do that. They're recruiting very vigorously. But the cycle's not completed until this happens. They report back to the community, and guess what they tell their brothers and sisters and family members? Why are we speaking this obscure language? I can't get a job. It doesn't help me. How about my little brother? He's speaking this obscure language. He's not going to be able to get a job. And thus, the death cycle is completed of the vanishing language. Natural disasters. You heard of the Ring of Fire, right? How many people have lived in a Ring of Fire? There's one. Okay. You have, yes, sir. Earthquakes, volcanoes, floods, typhoons. You heard of the Haiyan hurricane that hit, or a typhoon that hit the Philippines recently. This is a comparison of Haiyan to Katrina, and you can see from the intensity of the winds, over 200 miles an hour, how bad Haiyan actually was. Then there's globalization issues, the second half. Economic pressures, 3% to 10% are employed overseas from the Philippines. And the language requirement for employment, here's an example. Filipinos seeking work for employment, for instance, in the Cayman Islands, will now have to undergo an overseas English language testing as a requirement for their temporary or full-time work. The Department of Labor and Employment actually made that statement. This statement was issued by author Andy Kirkpatrick. It's hard to see any Filipino choosing to publish an article in Filipino when they can do it in English. Andrew King, the director of the English Language Testing System, states, employers in today's global market want people that have not just experience, but high proficiency, spoken and written, in English. Now, I don't want to put up a pretense. As a person that's trying to combat poverty, I agree. What can I say? I agree with that statement. This is what we have. You have poverty on one side, globalization on the other. You've got the Philippines in the center. And what's essentially happening is that they're coming together to squash out the vanishing languages. What programs exist today? Well, Mother tongue education was started in 2012. This is after you left, Doctor. Mother tongue education says that the Philippine people, the children, will be taught in their mother tongue up until at least the fifth grade at first, until fifth grade. 12 languages replaced English and Filipino in 2012, and then a year later, 6 more languages were added. The problem is, those are the most popular languages. What other programs exist? The Philippine Department of Education is in partnership with the Summer Institute of Linguistics. They are in cahoots together, working together. But so far, all they've done is the K-12 program. And 24 languages, according to the Department of Education Secretary, 24 languages are in the process of dying in the Philippines right now, as I stand here. Now, this is what I say. There's a National Endowment for Humanities, a National Sounds Foundation, which sponsored documenting endangered language program. But as of right now, the 10 top languages in this program don't include the Philippines. I don't have any answer. I don't know why. I don't know why. Conclusion. As best said by anthropologist Dr. Barbosa, unless immediate actions are undertaken, the Philippines could lose 50 languages within the next 20 years. Now, somebody could laugh and say, well, 20 years is a long time. Well, come on, get real. Well, okay. But 50 languages are a lot of languages. So how many languages are we talking about per year? If you have time, you'll be here tomorrow morning. Ms. Wu is going to talk about some of that, where she was granted a National Science Foundation scholarship for tomorrow's talk. So if you can come and listen to that, that'd be great. Recommendations. Immediate programs are needed to do the following. Document vanishing languages. That's easy. That's what this is about. That's what the seminar in Hawaii is all about, right? Document vanishing languages. As a person that wants to stop poverty, I can see where this has got the most benefit. Recruit younger remnant speakers into the field of linguistics. In other words, instead of bringing linguists to the Philippines, why not turn them into linguists? I was amazed how many linguists there were before I arrived in the Philippines back in 2009. And one of them is right here. But I was also amazed at how few Filipinos were in the field of linguistics. As a matter of fact, some of the universities have discontinued the whole program at a time when it's needed the most. This could be done through scholarships, grants, work assistantships, when a vanishing language is taught to the younger generation. I want to point this out. The National Science Foundation, the NEH, will fund 3-year grants and fellowships. They get 80 applications a year. They make 38 awards a year. The application deadline for May 2016 is coming up. And I'm hoping that we can stimulate interest for people to come. And that is the end of our talk. And we'll open it for questions. Yes, sir.
You presented the choice that young people face as between they have a choice between they can learn the minority language, they can maintain their minority language, or they can learn a majority language.
Yes, sir.
But that's only true if they can only learn one language. What if the children could go up bilingual and they could learn Tagalog and then they could also preserve their minority language?
Yes, as a matter of fact, that is something that has happened where some of the youth have actually gone into the, it's okay if I get a little closer to my voice, have actually gone into the concept of learning two different languages, three different languages. Now, how many people have heard of Tom Hedlund? Okay, University of Hawaii anthropologist. He was a very ambitious person that wanted to help save languages in the Philippines. And he spent a large amount of time learning specific language, even to the point of teaching his children the same language. He went back some years later What did he discover? He discovered that the people that learned a second language were no longer there in the community, and when they were in the community, they were introducing alcohol, pornography, petty crime. If you read some of his publications, you'll see how disappointing it was to him. You know, after spending a lifetime trying to preserve a language and writing a dictionary, the whole story. They the invitation to make money off of that second language is so strong, they abandon their first language. They only can communicate with their grandmother, but they have no interest anymore in preserving a language that doesn't produce for them. You know, and that's, this is the, you know, the whole, I'm glad you asked the question, because it's the whole focus of the talk, you know, is to show how poverty is such a strong motivator to get rid of the vanishing language. You know, it's just there. So thanks so much for your question.
Yes, sir. I'd just like to set the record straight a little bit. There have been National Science Foundation scholars working on Philippine languages. One particular woman from the University of Hawaii here got a grant and did a very good grammar of one of the disappearing languages in the northeast part of the Philippines, in the Iquitos language, Laura Robinson. We have actually right now in the University of Hawaii, Department of Linguistics here, a one of the minority students from Philippines has recently come to study this language. There is a very active program at the University of the Philippines where there are some very good young linguists working on Philippine languages, including some of these students who have, are actually getting their PhDs at universities outside, in Japan, for example, who maintain a current interest in documenting the minority languages of the Philippines. There are a number of applications to SOAS. There are at least five applications to SOAS this year for working on Philippine languages that I'm aware of. And the other point that I would like to make is that the majority, I don't know of any minority language group which is only monolingual. The ones that I have worked with know at least three languages, their own language, the trade language, and the national language, and sometimes one or two other local languages as well. The big problems that I see are that people who do get educated, and I'm familiar with a number of these, who have actually gotten degrees, are unable to find work in the Philippines, even though they're willing to accept the lower salaries. But they are presently working in as gardeners, even though they are qualified with higher degrees.
Yes. Yes. We see, we ran into the same thing.
Yeah.
One of the disappointing things was I did extensive search for National Science Foundation. What did I find? I found a map that indicated where the vanishing languages were in the Philippines. And then when you click on the little red dot that shows where they're at, it'll say, okay, great, send an email if you want more information. Send an email to National Science Foundation and we'll tell you more about the language. And you know. So I did that. I got a response. So I meant, sorry, this website's no longer maintained. And so then I looked into it, and it's something to do with, I don't know, lack of funds or reallocation of funds, something to do with that. So I think part of the problem is that the work that's going on has to be advertised, perhaps, you know, has to be made a little bit more visible. So, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm from the Philippines, and Dr. Reed is correct in saying that, in fact, we are multilingual, and that is really the norm in the Philippines. And I think that one of the reasons why some of the languages are vanishing, not really because of poverty. Well, yeah, partly because of poverty, but because of migration to urban centers, which really makes speakers of these languages have to learn the lingua franca of the area. You're from Baguio, right? So in Baguio, the lingua franca is one of the local languages, which is Baguio Ilocano. And Cordilleran languages, which are originally spoken in that area is now being revitalized because of the K-12 program. But children are really raised by their parents either to speak in English, Filipino, or Baguio Ilocano, which is the variety that's spoken in the area. But I guess that it is not really a matter of choosing to forget the local languages or their tongue, but really in their repertoire of languages, sometimes the mother tongue is really the lower priority.
Yes, you know, a person migrates out of the area and they know the vanishing language. Who are they going to teach it to? So let's say the language is somewhere in the northern polar area, mountains, and you're the person and you know that language. You migrate to Manila. You might teach it to your children, but the information that I have, it's not happening. Because you know, the Filipinos are smart people. Why teach them a language they aren't going to use? So you might teach it to you because you have an interest in linguistics, you have an interest in language, so you might do it. But if your major is nursing, or physical therapy, or engineering, anything else for that matter, business, there's a maybe no benefit. This is not there. But you're right, migration, that's precisely the problem. They migrate out. They know the language. It dies with them.
Yeah, for example, in our area, in the Cordilleras, it's amazing that now there is a significant number of Muslim populations where we have a lot of people from another island that are actually there in the Cordilleras right now, and it's a growing population. And these people speak different languages. And since they're there, they will have to learn the language of the area, which is a totally different language. But I don't see their language completely vanishing or being forgotten because they're there in a large group, and they have a very vibrant culture that they carry with them. And they live in communities together, so they have very active use of their language.
How many people?
Oh, I don't have statistics right now, but you would know that there's a large Muslim population.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, and some of those groups are small. I mean, there's a community, it may seem large to us, but say 50 people is not enough. You know, let's say it's just the relatives in the immediate area, say 30 to 50 for a language to last. Yes, ma'am?
I'm also Filipino. And thus, we give the impression that there absolutely are no or very little efforts to alleviate poverty as well as address language endangerment. We'd like to announce that the Translators Association of the Philippines has, through the years, been training people. And just last year, we revised the training so much so that the people that we target to train are first language speakers of indigenous languages and train them to be their own champions of language development, development of their own languages. And it's not just a training about linguistics or language development, it's a combination of community development as well as language development. And we also focus on development of values,
yes.
Because all three should go together if people are to be empowered to face the 21st century very well.
Yes, thank you. That's excellent. Yeah, the community has got to be involved together.
Yes.
Which is what we're going to be talking about tomorrow. Any other questions? Okay, well, thanks.
I'm just going to go and get one.